I know it's the final of Wimbledon today, but actually England are playing cricket against South Africa at the moment and making a right fist of it at Trent Bridge. I wonder who you think is the best cricketer at the moment. Don't think any of them are very good, are they? Joe Root, Moeen Ali, Johnny Bairstow. I want to tell you a story. In 1882, there was absolutely no doubt about the most famous cricketer in Britain. It was Charles Thomas Studd, but known always and forever as C.T. Studd. Four times a Cambridge Blue. He was captain of Cambridge Cricket Club. He played Test cricket for England when he was 21 years old. For 2 years running, he was the best all-round cricketer in the world. Best at batting, bowling, fielding. He was outstanding in every department. And he was a serious Christian. But he lived for cricket and not for Christ. In 1884, he went to a meeting of a small charity called the China Inland Mission. And he heard about the vastness of the spiritual need in China. Do you know, in the 1880s, 25% of the world's population lived in China. Huge number. Completely unreached. And he knew that night that was where Christ was calling him. It broke his mother's heart to see him go, but in February 1885, he and six other Cambridge graduates sailed to China and he never played cricket again. Before he left, he said, "I want to recommend you tonight to my master. I've tried many ways of pleasure in my time. I've been running after the best master, and thank God, now I've found him." And he lived for the rest of his life as a pioneering missionary in China and Africa, and he died in 1931. And I've got to tell you, in my house, C.T. Studd is a real hero. I reckon along with Eric Liddell, he is the only other man I would love to have met, C.T. Studd. So I want to look at just one verse with you today. And the printing hasn't come out brilliantly. So I'm going to put it up on the screen here. Just one verse, Romans 1, verse 12. I'm going to read it to you. Don't look at your paper, look at the screen. "Therefore, says the Apostle Paul, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship." Romans 12, verse 1 is a call to sacrifice. It is a call to sacrificial living. And there's so much in that one verse, but I just want to bring out four little things for you this morning. Four little things. First, the call to sacrifice. It always comes. It always flows out of God's grace. It always does. Paul has just spent 11 chapters of the book of Romans. Okay, look at me, everybody. He's just spent 11 chapters explaining grace. Just like I have spent, it feels, 5 years trying to explain grace here. And so he says, therefore, in view of God's mercy, he says, in view of what God is like, in view of what he has done in Christ for you and for me, in view of what God has done for older brothers and younger sons and older sons, in view of God's mercies, which are new every day, he says, I urge you to offer up your life as a living sacrifice. You know, it is an absolutely extraordinary call. It's the call that C.T. Studd heard that night. But please, please understand, the call to sacrifice for God always springs out of his grace towards me. It may sound as though you have to be a C.T. Studd in order to do this, but I want to tell you, you don't. God's giants, this is someone else who went to China, Hudson Taylor, he said, God's giants are weak people who do great things for God because they reckon on him being with them. God's giants are weak people who do great things for God. Sacrifice is not heroic. It is not unattainable. It is invariably mundane and it is totally unglamorous. We think, if we think at all, that we have to do exceptional things for God. Absolutely not. We don't. We don't. Forget that. We just have to be exceptional in the very, very, very ordinary things of life, which is what most of us are involved in. Sacrifice is simply a call to be wholehearted for God. But it always flows out of what God has first done for us, his grace. Second thing from this verse, the call to sacrifice is urgent. It's urgent. Paul does not say, I encourage you. He does not say, I think this might be a good idea. He says, brothers and sisters, I urge you. The call to sacrifice is urgent because the needs are everywhere. And Satan's biggest lie is always, don't worry about it. Leave it to someone else. Leave it for now. Don't worry about it. There is always time. You know, I found this really challenging. The founder of the Salvation Army, William Booth, once said, not called. Did you say not called? Not heard the call, I think you should say. Put your ear down to the Bible and hear him bid you go and pull sinners out of the fire of sin. Put your ear down to the burdened heart of humanity and listen to its cry for help. Go stand by the gates of hell and hear the damned entreat you. Then look Christ in the face and tell him that you have joined heart and soul in the march to publish his mercy to the world. The call is urgent. Do you hear it? It's urgent. And yet, thirdly, the call to sacrifice is voluntary. It is completely voluntary. It's a call to sacrifice that is urgent, but it's completely voluntary. It is a free will offering. No one can force you. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. Think of the greatest sacrifice in history, the cross. Jesus' life was not taken. He gave it. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, but he wasn't forced. His choice, his decision. And in just the same way, God will never force you. What you do, friends, what you do willingly, you do joyfully, or don't do it at all. Don't do it at all. I'm going to struggle to tell you this story. But I heard this story about a mission held in West Africa 100 years ago. And on the first night, a woman, a deeply, desperately poor, destitute woman, was powerfully converted on the first night of this mission. And the custom was that each evening of this mission, people who had been really challenged and affected by the message would bring small gifts to lay on the altar in gratitude to God. Just things like a yam or a grapefruit, something they'd grown. But this woman was so poor that she had absolutely nothing to give. But on the last night she came forward and she put down on the altar a silver coin worth an awful lot of money. And the missionary in charge of the mission thought, oh no, she must have stolen it. There's no way she could afford that. She must have stolen it. But he didn't want to embarrass her, so he didn't say anything. But afterwards, he went up to her and he said, how could you possibly afford that gift? This is what she said. She was so happy to be freed from her crippling guilt and sin. She was so happy to know finally where she was headed. She was so happy to discover the depth of Jesus' love for her that she wanted to contribute to making Christ known. So this is what she had done. It had been her privilege to go to a local plantation owner and sell herself into slavery for life, for the silver coin, which she then laid on the altar that night. And you may say, madness. How stupid. What a ridiculous thing to do. Maybe. But compulsion? Never. No way. Nothing compelled her to do that. There was no force. She did it willingly. She did it voluntarily. But you know what? If what the Bible says is true, if what Paul says about grace is right, then in the end, sacrifice is simply our logical response to what God has done. And that's the last thing. The call to sacrifice is simply a logical response. You see, the last bit of verse 1 This is your true and proper worship. The word for true and proper could be translated reasonable or even logical. So Paul is saying, what I'm suggesting, he says, what I'm suggesting to you is simply a logical response to what Christ has done for us. So I want to go back to C.T. Studd. Just hear this. There's another bit of the story that really gets me, and it is the application for us today. So please listen. 2 years after he went to China, 1887, he inherited from his dead father, because he'd reached the age of 25, he inherited £29,000. Now, you can go online and you can convert £29,000 from 1885 into today's money. And in today's money, that's between £2 and £2.5 million. He inherited a fortune. He immediately gave £20,000 away to 4 Christian missions. He said to his wife-to-be, "What shall we do with the rest?" "What did Jesus tell the rich young man to do?" she said. "Jesus told him to sell all he had." So his wife-to-be said, "Well, let's give it all away and let's start clear with the Lord at our wedding." And that is exactly what they did. You know, C.T. Studd really, really challenges me, because you know what? He gave up everything. He gave up fame. He gave up recognition. He gave up success. He gave up everything the world values. But he had one last thing. He had one last thing. He had all that money and he gave that away. Do you know, friends, do you know what we spend so much of our time doing? Do you know what we do? We all spend money that sometimes we don't even have to buy things we don't even need to impress people we don't even like. Don't we? Don't we? One very real area where we could live sacrificially is in our financial giving. Wherever you serve, whatever you do, fantastic. We are so grateful. But this is an area that we need to think about. The turnaround at Denton these last few years has been miraculous. Such that for the very first time in all history, in all, 500 million years that Denton Church has been going, we are finally paying for the cost of a minister. We're finally paying the full cost in 2017 of a full-time minister. It's never been done. But please, we need to keep going at it, because we have lost some significant givers in the last 12 months through death and circumstances. Our income at the moment does not match our outgoings, and the treasurer is worried. And when the treasurer is worried, I get worried. So I want to say, please hear this. By all means, give generously and give widely wherever you want to. But if you are a Christian, I want to say to you, I want to look you in the eye this morning, I want to tell you, if you're a Christian, gospel giving for your church family must be your first priority. The Bible doesn't say how much, but what would Paul say? Paul would say, give in view of God's mercy. He would say, give in response to God's grace. So here we are, wait for it, try 10% of your gross income. Try giving 10% of your gross income and see what happens. I love this story about John Wesley. John Wesley, the Methodist. Incredible preacher. He worked out how much he needed to live on, and he stuck to that figure for the rest of his life. So during his life, his income went like this, and his expenses stayed exactly the same. So by the end of his life, he wasn't tithing. He was giving away 90%. Of what he got. 90%. I heard this story on the radio the other day. Jeremy Vine show. Do you ever listen to that on Radio 2? You might have heard this one. And it really struck me. Lovely sounding girl. She rang in. Really lovely sounding girl. Her mother died when she was a teenager. She was the only child. And it was a family with plenty of money. She was the only child. The dad remarried. And the new wife had 2 daughters. And when the dad died, this girl got nothing. She got absolutely nothing, not a penny, and it was awful. It was a terrible story. It was heartrending. But do you know what the moral of that story is? Sit lightly to your possessions. Sit lightly to your possessions. Do you know what? I better my children have nothing than that they fight over it. Sorry. Better they have nothing than that they fight over it. Friends, remember, 10% of nothing is nothing. 10% of not very much is not very much. I'm not suggesting you give from what you don't have. I'm suggesting you give from what you do have. And here's the thing. I make you a cast iron promise today. You will never outgive God. When you give, you see, you are trusting God. You are trusting him in such a tangible, real, meaningful way. Let me give you a real life illustration of this. God willing, we are going to have a curate here. Denton is going to have a curate from June 2018. This is an incredible provision for us. We could not possibly afford a curate, but it will be largely funded by the diocese. And it is no coincidence that as we have dramatically increased our parish contribution, we are offered a curate. And so somebody said to me the other day, "Ah, money talks, doesn't it? It shouldn't, but it does." I don't think that's quite fair. I think there's something else going on. I want to show you what I mean using another illustration. When I was 31 years old, I was made a partner in a law firm. I really liked the job. I liked my boss. I liked the people. I liked the work. But here's the thing, they never paid me properly. In my humble opinion. When I became a partner, I thought, great, at last they'll sort this out. At last they'll pay me properly. But they didn't. And a year later, I'd gone. You see, the way they paid me said to me, "We're not serious. We're not serious." You see, money, not always, but very often, is the way that you show that you are serious. And so the money that we are now giving to the diocese says to the diocese, "We are serious." Are you listening? And so the diocese say to us, "We're going to take you seriously. You're now taking this stuff seriously. We can see you're doing church seriously. We can see that you're taking church seriously. We're going to take you seriously. We're going to place and fund a curate with you, and in return, you will train him." Do you see? You can't outgive God. That massive increase that we have made to the diocese, we're going to get it all back tenfold. That's the bit I'm worried about recording. But by funding a curate for us, we're getting it back tenfold. Tenfold! You cannot outgive God, I promise you. I promise you. So that's how much. But here's the second thing. Give in a planned way. If you don't plan to give, you won't give. I know from bitter personal experience. When I didn't plan to give, I didn't give. The very, very, very best way to give is to join the parish giving scheme. It costs you nothing, but it is the most fantastic blessing. It has been part of how the finances here have been transformed. It is a very efficient way to give, and the treasurer loves it. And if the treasurer is happy, I'm happy. But the main thing is, in setting it up, in having to sit down and set it up, you will plan your giving, and therefore you will give. If you're already using the parish giving scheme, when was the last time you reviewed your giving? I'm reviewing mine this year. I can see the need. I'm reviewing mine. When was the last time you reviewed what you're giving? So I'm going to finish. I first preached on giving in this church 4.5 years ago. And someone famously said to me, "Best sermon on giving I've ever heard, but it won't make a blind bit of difference." They were wrong. Utterly, utterly wrong. Thankfully wrong. I said 4.5 years ago, if we can sort out our giving, we will see real blessings in this place. And it's happened. But I also said that day, do you remember this? Never allow a truth of God that is brought home to your soul to pass without acting on it. Record it with ink or with blood. Ink is preferable. Sit down today, plan to give, and then give what you have planned. Let's do some business with God. And let's get on with making disciples. Do speak to me if it would be helpful. I don't want to make you feel guilty. I want you to respond to this stuff. Romans 12, verse 1. Please review your giving if you are already giving. And let's get on it again. The time has come. Amen.